Need your daily fix on mixed martial arts?
We're going to kind of recap Bellator 155.
From UFC 198.
Who's who?
Kind of a controversial decision.
And who's not?
I couldn't figure out why, and then it hit me.
Well, don't you fret, because Golden State Media Concepts got you covered. Get your daily dose of MMA podcast. Everything from the UFC, Bellator Fighting Championships, Extreme Cage Fighting, Invicta Fighting Championships, and so much more. Join us as we talk about some of the biggest names in mixed martial arts. We've got you covered here on Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast.
All right, now, thank you for tuning in to the Golden State Media Concepts Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm your host, Tate, and today we're talking about UFC 214, Cormier versus John Bones Jones, which happened this past weekend. And let me tell you something, this fight did not disappoint. This card did not disappoint. You had a little something for everyone in this card, but it was capped off with John Jones reclaiming his light heavyweight title from Daniel Cormier. And, you know, with this win, this pretty much slates that John Jones is the greatest. He's the greatest light heavyweight of all time, and he is arguably the greatest fighter of all time. And, you know, when I start thinking about the greatest of all time, I always put in Anderson Silva. I go back to the old school, I know, but Hoist Gracie, John Jones, GSP. That's my big four. And with this win, John Jones might have climbed above all of them. Now, this fight, it was a third round high kick knockout, which is a big deal. And this goes a long ways in cementing John Jones as the greatest of all time. You're looking at Daniel Cormier, arguably the second greatest light heavyweight in history. Undefeated as a heavyweight. Undefeated as a light heavyweight, with the exception of the two losses to John Bones Jones. Now, when we look at this card, you know, round one was a super close round. I gave the round one to John Jones just because when the fight started out, he landed a lot of significant shots. You know, he really started to fight off really strong. Cormier nailed him right away with a huge uppercut, which I thought was going to be the key to this fight, because the last fight, Cormier let a lot of opportunities for uppercuts slide, but Cormier kind of established himself right out the gate with a huge uppercut, which knocked John Jones's mouthpiece out. It was a lot of pressure by Cormier, a lot of big shots from John Jones. But in the end, I had John Jones squeaking it out. I was kind of surprised that when I was listening to the recap, everyone in the studio for Fox, which granted, they're kind of friendly with Daniel Cormier. They gave all the rounds, the first and second round, and said that Cormier was winning the third round. I gave round two to John Jones as well. I thought Cormier was coming on strong, but in the end, I thought John Jones was landing a lot of significant shots as Cormier was trying to kind of march him down. Cormier kept putting pressure on, but Jones kept firing shots. And the thing about it is, Jones came with a game plan, and he was mixing shots up. It was massive head shots mixed in with low kicks, oblique kicks, knees to the stomach. He kept taking that. He kept working the entire body, legs, body, head, legs, body, head. He kept on. And a lot of the work that he was doing, especially with the oblique kicks and the knees, there was a lot of body work early in the fight, which later we find out was part of their game plan. One, by doing a lot of low kicks, a lot of knees to the stomach, it wears down your opponent. And then two, it really set Cormier up for the round three high kick, which knocked him out. When you go into, you know, round three, Cormier's really pressing the issue, and Cormier's turned this into a boxing match in his as far as the way he was approaching it. Granted, he did have some leg kicks which were a little different than the first fight, but he wasn't really trying to wrestle with John Jones. And when John threw that high kick, when John Jones first threw it, Cormier naturally went for to protect his body, and he dropped his hands and kind of jumped back with his body, but that kick came up and over, not quite like a question mark kick. It just came straight on over before Cormier could recover. He was nailed. He was rocked. John Jones jumped on him. He tried to do a flying knee. He did a kick which made Cormier stumble, go down, and then the ground and pound. And that's one of the things about John Jones's game that everyone kind of overlooks. John Jones's ground and pound is his best part of his game. Because of how tall and lanky he is, that ground and pound comes from a much higher place than most fighters are able to throw that high kick. So not the high kick, but the shots to the head. So they were devastating shots. Now, when Cormier was getting hit at one point when he was on the ground, I personally was like, I was yelling to that they should stop it. When Cormier's arm collapsed down, there was like another five or six shots that I thought should have been stopped, the fight should have been stopped way earlier. But I'm actually, in this particular case, I'm glad that Big John McCarthy did not stop the fight earlier. And the reason why that is because when the fight was stopped and it was over, when Cormier got up and he was on Dream Street, he was still wobbly. He was wobbly way after the fight was over, but he didn't realize that he gotten stopped. And he was saying that, initially that he thought the fight was stopped too early. And, he was complaining to Dana. He was mad at Big John. As a matter of fact, he lightly shoved Big John as well. Nothing major, but he did. Big John just ignored it. But then when he looked up at the screen and he watched the replay, you could see the shocked look on his face that he knew he had gotten stopped. And it was clear that it wasn't an early stoppage. He just got beaten. And you see him, just the shocked look on his face, and then the emotional outburst where he just starts crying. You know, he's hurt. He's really hurt. One of the things, I was surprised when Joe Rogan came over and actually interviewed him after the fight, because he was devastated. And it's the thing that was really tough to hear was when he was crying and he's saying, you know, Rogan asked him about the rivalry between him and Jones, and he said, If you lose twice to the same guy, there isn't a rivalry. And, you know, and I think at that point, Rogan realized, like, you know what, we're just wrapping this up. And he just thanked him and moved on. I personally, I really wanted to hear what he had to say, but I was hoping he would show up for the press conference afterwards, but he didn't. But I will say this: John Jones was a classy guy afterwards. It wasn't like the last time where they were, you know, there was still a lot of animosity against Cormier. He said some really nice things in the interview about how he was a great champion. He hopes to be a champion like him. He's a great father. He really was class personified, like when after the fight, which I truly applauded him for doing that. Now, you know, I started second guessing myself when I started watching the UFC on Fox, the after show, where they all had Cormier winning the first two rounds and winning the third when he got knocked out. I didn't see it that way. I looked at it as, you know, I thought Jones clearly won the first. I had him edging out the second really close. That second round I thought could go either way. And I did think he was starting to win the third. But when you look at the official scorecards, all three judges scored the first round for John Jones. The second round was more of a split. Two of the judges gave it to Cormier. One judge scored it the way I did, where he gave it to the second round to John Jones. So on one judge scorecard had it 2-0 for Jones. And the other two had it 1-1, kind of the way Dana White had it. But no one really had it Cormier winning. So I was kind of, you know, I wanted to clarify that, because sometimes when you start listening to the broadcast, you those guys are experts. But when you're scoring a fight, you know, sometimes personal feelings get involved. Cormier is a really nice guy. I'm a big fan of his. But in my opinion, I didn't think he had won both rounds and under no circumstances. Also, when I was looking at the fight, and I've watched the fight 2 or 3 times, and actually I've watched it 3 times. I looked at the fight, and two things I realized. First off, the pace that Cormier had, in my opinion, had already lost the first 2 rounds. Let's say he split the first two. I didn't think the pace that he was going at, even if he wouldn't have gotten knocked out, I don't think he could have kept the pace going, because Cormier was clearly at his best. This was the best Cormier I'd ever seen. I've watched probably 90% of all of his fights, even before he got to the UFC. This was the best Cormier you could actually have. In my opinion, though, I thought John Jones, because, you know, I think there's a little revisionist history. I think, you know, everyone talks about how spectacular Jones was. John Jones had a year and a half hiatus. Then he came back and he fought OSP. And then he had another year and a half. And then he fought Cormier. So technically, this was his second fight in 3 years. And I thought it showed. I thought a very rusty John Jones. John Jones was getting, Cormier really cracked Jones a number of times. But I personally thought John Jones was very rusty, because he was getting hit with a lot of shots that he would not normally have gotten caught with. Just like he was with OSP. He got caught with a couple of shots when he fought OSP that he would not normally have gotten caught with. With that being said, and I'm saying this as Daniel Cormier is the second best light heavyweight in the history of mixed martial arts, and that's all divisions. I mean, that's all organizations. Cormier at his absolute peak, at his absolute best, and a rusty John Jones still wins. And that goes to show you how impressive John Jones is. This is no slam or anything against Daniel Cormier, because I have so much respect for Cormier. And I think Cormier can whoop every single person in the light heavyweight division, not named John Jones right now. But even a rusty John Jones is better than, Cormier at his peak. I think this the next fight that John Jones is going to have, I think you'll see a dramatic improvement. Because, you know, the timing. Cormier made John Jones miss a lot of shots. He wasn't catching. There's a number of shots that he should have landed flush way before that he missed. And that goes down to his timing wasn't quite there. Even though as impressive as he was, he still had a timing issue, in my opinion. Now, when we're talking about after the fight, and we're talking in the interview, at one point at the very end of the fight, John Jones grabs the mic and he makes a comment in regards to he put up a challenge to Brock Lesnar as far as Brock Lesnar. Do you want to know what it feels like to get your butt kicked by a guy that's, 40, 50 pounds lighter than you? And he challenged them. And at first I was super excited about, the prospect of a John Jones Brock Lesnar fight. But, when I took the time to really think about the fight, my initial thoughts were this is just a bad fight for John Jones. But as I look at things, John, when you look at this matchup, I think if Brock's able to grab Jones at any point in this fight and take Jones down and he's on top, I don't think there's any way possible that John Jones could get Brock Lesnar off of him. If Brock ever takes him down and gets on top, it'll be over. You got a guy that's going to be at least 40 to 50 pounds heavier than John Jones at the time of the fight. Now, with that being said, with John Jones, if John Jones uses his reach and his speed, John Jones has more skill than anyone Brock Lesnar has ever stepped in the ring with. Alistair Overeem is probably the person with the most skills. At a distance, Brock stands no chance. He's going to have to charge. Pretty much just charge John Jones, which I think would be a strategy. In order for John Jones to fight Brock Lesnar, I think you have to be very careful. And it may end up being like the co-main event, which was Damian Maia versus Tyron Woodley, where it was a little bit more of a tactical, more boring fight, because you cannot press that. If you press the issue with Brock Lesnar and he grabs Jones, takes him to the ground, it's over. If at any point Brock Lesnar gets on top of Jones, I don't think he has an answer for it. That's a different animal, 40, 50 pounds on you, world-class wrestler, Olympic-level wrestler, on top of you, but with a huge weight difference. That's my take on it. So that concludes my thoughts on the John Jones fight. And when we come back, we'll be talking about more fights on this card. Stay tuned. And we'll be right back.
Check out the show built around the women of MMA. From the UFC to the Extreme Cage Fighting, we got the fights covered.
Listen.
It's the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast. The latest news of upcoming fights, discussions of previous matches. Join us as we talk to and about the biggest names in women's mixed martial arts, past, present, and future. When it's the women's fight game, you know where to listen to. The Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast.
All right, we're back. And we were just talking about that John Jones, Daniel Cormier fight, and was John Jones wins back his light heavyweight title, making him arguably the greatest light heavyweight champion of all time, possibly the greatest fighter in mixed martial arts history. Now, from this Cormier-Jones fight, you had a situation, you had a much praised fight that everyone loved and everyone talked about. This next fight, which was the co-main event, was Damian Maya versus the champ, Tyron Woodley. And Woodley wins a unanimous decision. But the big story behind that is a lot of people were very upset with this fight. And you had people booing. You had an interesting situation in the arena where people had their cell phones out with the lights on and they were waving. There was literally thousands of phones waving back and forth. They were chanting boring. And then afterwards, you had Dana White, who kind of threw Tyron Woodley under the bus and said it was a horrible fight. It was boring. And pretty much the champ, who had just went against maybe the most dangerous Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighter in the UFC, was pretty much punished by Dana by saying, you know what, this fight was so boring, and for that he's not getting, he's Michael Bisping is getting GSP, Tyron Woodley is not. And before this, it was just set in stone. The winner of this fight was going to get GSP. And because Dana was not happy with the way things went, he took the GSP fight from the champ, Tyron Woodley. I think this was absolutely wrong. Also, when you take into account that Damian Maya had, you know, he had taken out Carlos Condit. He had taken out, I mean, it was seven fights in a row. No one had an answer to Damian Maya's Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I call him the human backpack. And Tyron Woodley came in with, you know, with a tactical game plan. A lot of fighters, I mean, a lot of fans might not have liked this fight because it's not blood and guts. I looked at this fight and I loved this fight. And it wasn't boring to me at all. I thought it was a chess match. It wasn't a, I'm going to give you my best shot and you're going to give me your best shot. It was Damian Maya's game plan versus Tyron Woodley's game plan. And it was a lot of fun watching Tyron, really work on his game plan and work it to perfection, actually. I was a little surprised that they attacked him after this fight. I mean, that he got such backlash from this fight, and they talked about how he's a boring fighter. Anyone who has watched Tyron Woodley fight and say he's a boring fighter is absolutely crazy. Was this fight the most action-packed? No. Was the last fight before that against Wonderboy Thompson, was that action-packed? No, but there was a huge knockdown. But you look at the fight of the night, three fights ago, the first fight between Tyron Woodley and Wonderboy, that was considered a fight of the night, an action-packed fight. You look at the fight against Robbie Lawler, that was an action-packed fight. So I don't understand why anyone would call him a boring fighter. He's a smart fighter. That's what I'll tell you. He went against the best karate guy in the UFC with Wonderboy, and he negated his karate style. Then he followed that up with wrestling arguably the best Brazilian jiu-jitsu specialist in the UFC, and he managed to stop 21 takedowns and completely negate the guy who was considered, you know, the Brazilian jiu-jitsu specialist. And everyone was getting on him, and I say this. If he fights this fight differently, he may not walk out of there as champ. If he approaches this fight the way Carlos Condit went against Damian Maia, that was a bad decision on his part. Carlos Condit came out. He tried to, you know, put his will onto Damian Maia. All Damian Maia needs is to be able to grab you, take you down. He will submit you, just like he did Carlos Condit. Tyron Woodley knew that. He had a calculated game plan, and he won. As far as anyone talking about how he didn't put the gas on, in the first round, yes, he dropped Maia. But one of the things that people don't realize, and he made the announcement today, in the very first round, early in the fight, he tore his labrum, which is like just pretty much saying he's tore his shoulder. So he tore his shoulder, which allowed it to dislocate. And according to Tyron, it dislocated during the fight 3 to 4 different times. So he really, you know, what I'd like to see any fighter try to, if you have your power hand, let's just say you have a torn labrum that every time you throw an overhand right, it pops out of the joint. Let's see you try to knock somebody out and put a lot of pressure on someone. I was impressed that he kept quiet. He stayed focused. He stopped throwing big power shots. He started throwing more straight shots. He played a very calculating game. I thought he fought a perfect fight for his opponent. And when they talk about, you know, that it was kind of a boring fight, Tyron still threw 153 significant strikes. He landed 37%. He landed 37%, which was a total of 57 significant strikes. And I know they were saying that it was a welterweight title record for the least amount of strikes landed in a fight or thrown in a fight. But I didn't have a problem with that. I'm a big MMA fan. I was totally, you know, into this fight, but let's just say that most of the people, let's say they hated this fight. This card, I still didn't give anyone the right to boo, because this card was stacked with nothing but top flight fights. You had the blood and guts fights where you had two guys with Lawler and Cerrone. They kind of went at it. You had the huge knockout with Volkan Ozdemir. You had the tactical fight with Cormier and Jones with a lot of action and a spectacular knockout. You had everything in this card. You know, so, and then you had the chess match, which was Maia and Woodley. I thought this card delivered exactly what you wanted. If you wanted, you wanted to see two great fighters, women, you wanted to see, you know, top notch, women's MMA, you had Cyborg Everinger. This card covered everything. So I don't understand why everyone was so down on this fight. Also, the champ won, but he got all the criticism. I don't understand that. The champ, you know, the job of the champ is to defend the title, which he did. He's taken on number one contender after number one contender. I can understand if someone went to Damian Maia and said, listen, the fight was boring. Because it was boring, you didn't press enough to win the fight, and that's why you lost. I can understand if someone was saying, like, Maia could have done more. Woodley won every single round. So how, you know, he pitched a shutout. So why is he the bad guy in this one? And one of the things I'll say by talking about this is I personally think Tyron is not maybe one of the more popular UFC champions, although he tries very hard to say the right things. He tried to toe the company line. If I was going to give Tyron some advice, I would tell you, and a lot of people will not agree with this, but it reminds me of Floyd Mayweather in his early years. You know, Floyd would try to be the company guy, the guy that tried to say the right things like that, but he just wasn't getting the popularity. And then he switched to the persona of Money Mayweather. I personally think Tyron should just say the hell with the fans, embrace being a bad guy. You know exactly who you are. Embrace it. And just, you know, by embracing it, I think you would improve your draw as far as how people perceive you. You'll get a lot more people coming out to see you lose than to see you compete right now. And that's one of the things that Tyron wants. He wants big money fights. Well, if you can't win the crowd over, make the crowd hate you. That's what Floyd learned. Floyd learned that, you know what, I'm never going to be Oscar De La Hoya. The people aren't going to love me like Oscar De La Hoya, but they will tune in to see me get shut up. And, you know, I think Tyron should take that same approach, because he's not getting the respect he deserves. Look at Daniel Cormier. Cormier has been nothing but a classy champion. But he never was loved. You know, even in this loss, you know, he was just not a love fighter. I don't know why, but just, you know, being, you know, sometimes people don't like certain fighters for whatever reason that is. I have my opinions, but I'm going to keep that one to myself. But I think no matter what Tyron Woodley does, he's never going to be a like champion. So make people tune in to see you lose. That's just my take on Tyron Woodley. I know a lot of people will disagree with me, but if you look at Floyd's pay-per-view numbers went through the roof once he embraced being the villain. You know, there has to be the hero. Someone has to be a villain. And I, you know, as much as I hate to say it, I think Tyron needs to embrace that in order for him to get the fights and the respect that he deserves. When we come back, we're going to talk about a few more fights on this card. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
This is your ultimate stop for everything sports. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Should I say more? From the NFL, MLB, the NBA, to MMA. It's all in here. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Listen now.
So we're back, and now we're going to talk about the UFC featherweight title match between Chris Cyborg and Tonya Evinger, in which Chris Cyborg won by KO in the third round at 3 minutes and 5 seconds into the third round. This was an interesting fight. First off, I want to give Chris Cyborg, I want to congratulate her on winning finally the UFC featherweight title. This was way, way, way overdue. Cyborg should have been in the UFC at the same time Ronda Rousey came in the UFC. As a matter of fact, I could even make a case that she should have came in before Ronda Rousey. Cyborg has been the most devastating fighter for a decade. She's been the Mike Tyson of women's mixed martial arts continuously for a decade. And, you know, when we're talking about this fight, a lot of people gave Tanya, you know, a lot of credit. Tanya was very rough on herself at the end of the fight because she was very disappointed in her outcome. I was very proud of the way Tanya performed against Chris Cyborg, which, in my opinion, is the greatest women's mixed martial arts fighter in history. Like, we're talking about John Jones. Is John Jones the greatest of all time? Well, in my opinion, Chris Cyborg is, without question, the most devastating and the greatest of all time. And I always looked at this fight as, for most fighters or most fans, they don't know who Tanya Evinger is. But Tanya Evinger has been the standing Invicta champion for a very long time. This was the very first Invicta super fight. You had the long-standing bantamweight champion in Invicta versus the long-standing featherweight champion in Invicta. So this was the first super fight. I thought Tanya did an amazing job. When you look at what Tanya was stacked up against, I just want you to picture this. Take any fighter. Okay, this is going to be your very first fight in the UFC, which is what they call the UFC curse. You come, you know, because of all the pressure, it's your first time UFC. That's a tough thing to do. Next, we're going to put you on the biggest card of the year. Even more pressure. Oh, we're going to do this. You're going to have to do this on short notice. So you're not going to even have a full camp to prepare. Even more pressure. Oh, we know you're a bantamweight, but you're going to have to fight 10 pounds above your normal weight class. This is starting to get unfair. Then here's the final caveat. You're going to fight with all that. Your first fight, the big first fight in the UFC, the biggest event of the year, short camp, 10 pounds over your weight. And then we're going to put you in the ring with the Mike Tyson of women's mixed martial arts. We're going to put you in the ring with Chris Cyborg. And Tanya wasn't pretty with the fight, but she was tough. She was super tough in this fight. As a matter of fact, at one point, she actually took Cyborg down for a quick second. Cyborg was just too much for her. The biggest problem was Cyborg was putting too much pressure on her. It made it very hard for Tanya to engage. When you look at the number of punches thrown, total strikes, Cyborg threw 144, Tanya threw 87. She connected with 32 significant strikes on Chris Cyborg, which is something that a lot of people don't get a chance to even land shots. Tanya was able to land a number of significant shots, but the big shots were all landed by, were mostly landed by Cyborg, which she threw 74 significant strikes at Tanya, which really kept Tanya at bay. Because those shots were so big, so strong, it made Tanya's shots become shorter. Because at that point, you don't want to stretch yourself out too far because you're too worried about getting clobbered, pretty much. So there was a lot to worry about between the pressure, the big shots. Cyborg was just too much for Tanya. I thought she had a great account. She's made it further than almost any other fighter, taking it to late into the third round. But in the end, Cyborg was just too much. And so where does this put Cyborg right now? As I said, I think she's the greatest women's mixed martial arts fighter of all time. That's the first thing I'm going to say. Second thing is, and I'm sorry, guys. it's not Ronda Rousey. And I would have said that before she lost to Amanda Nunes and Holly Holm, if Ronda goes up to Cyborg's weight, she would not stand a chance. With that being said, she's the greatest featherweight champion, women's featherweight champion of all time. And I look and I say, okay, so what are you going to do with her? She's the champ. There's not really a division there. So who is she going to fight next? And and it's one of those things where if you look at the women's featherweight division, all the women's, the top female fighters have been gobbled up. Bellator has gobbled up a lot of the featherweight division, the top fighters. A lot of the other organizations have gobbled up the rest of them. So there's not a lot of competition out there for Chris Cyborg. Really, there's really four fights that Cyborg right now can have. And I think she's going to get all four of those fights because you kind of have no choice to do these four fights as they start to build this division. The first fight I'm looking at, we have Megan Anderson. I think Megan Anderson is the one fighter. I think she's a little young and she needs a little more experience, but she's the one fighter that I think could really put some pressure on Cyborg. She's naturally as big as Cyborg is. And that's something that could be, someone that maybe can handle the pressure. And she's big and strong. So that's the one fighter that I think has the best shot. The next fighter who a lot of people are thinking is going to be her next fight, that's going to be Holly Holm. I think they're going to end up putting Cyborg versus Holly Holm as the very next fight. Of course, you have Jermaine Duranemi. I don't like that fight strictly because Jermaine did not want to fight Chris Cyborg, so there's no reason to make that fight. And then the last person is Kat Zingano. Kat Zingano, originally, when they were going to do the inaugural flyweight title fight, originally they were looking at it being Holly versus Kat Zingano, but Kat Zingano had some health issues. In which apparently those health issues are coming, she's starting to heal up. So by the end of this year, Kat Zingano will be back on the scene. And she has expressed, she was on the MMA Hour, and she was talking about how, she's definitely open to fighting Cyborg. She wants to go up to the featherweight division, but she also wants to fight in the bantamweight division as well. I think Kat Zingano is a very tough lady. I would love to see that fight as well. So there are some fights to be made. I mean, you got to, if you eliminated Jermaine Duranemi, who has a fight coming up, you say you really got three fights: Holly Holm, Megan Anderson, and Kat Zingano. So that's what we have. That's what, when you're looking at what's next, what to expect next for Chris Cyborg. I think that's the most common and realistic thing. I don't see any other fighters from any other organization coming in and jumping ahead of those three. So that's the situation. That's what we have. But once again, like I said, Chris is nothing but a professional. Sometimes she's kind of hard to understand, but if you listen to her, she's a quality lady. She's really sweet, and you really do have the Mike Tyson of the women's division now as your featherweight champion in the UFC. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this card, and which we're going to talk about that Robbie Lawler Cowboy Cerrone fight. Stay tuned and we'll be back.
Check out the show built around the women of MMA. From the UFC, Invicta FC, Bellator, and ONE Championship, we got the fights covered. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast. The latest news of upcoming fights, discussions of previous matches. Join us as we talk to and about the biggest names in women's mixed martial arts, past, present, and future. When it's the women's fight game, you know where to listen to the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast.
Right now, we're talking about that UFC 214 card, Cormier versus Jones 2. And now we're talking about that welterweight title. I mean, it wasn't title match, but welterweight match between Robbie Lawler, who had been off for over a year, and Donald Cowboy Cerrone. And this was a really good fight. I thought it was a lot of back and forth. I was really surprised at how Robbie came out the gates swinging. I thought with the fact that he had been off for a year, I thought he would maybe kind of start out a little slow. But, you know, he had done his homework. And one of the things that you know about Cowboy in the past is that he tends to start off slow and build momentum. And so Robbie came out and he jumped on him right away. And I was a little surprised. I'm like, oh my man, he's going to finish Cerrone early. But Cowboy weathered the storm and he really started to come back. When I looked at the fight, I gave round one to Robbie Lawler. I gave round two easily to Cowboy. I thought it was with the new scoring. That's one of the weird things about the new scoring. Do you score round two a 10-8 because it was that round was all Robbie Lawler, I mean, all Cowboy Cerrone? Not in a devastating way, but it was a lot. He controlled that round. Round three was a much closer round. It went back and forth. I thought Cowboy did enough to win round three, but I could easily see it going the other way. When in the end, I had the fight scored 2-1 for Cowboy Cerrone, so I thought he won the fight. Where it was actually reversed when the results came in, not necessarily surprised because I could totally see the fight. The rounds were so. Rounds one and three were so close, especially three. If you scored round three for Robbie Lawler, I had no problem with it. So I didn't have a big problem with the decision. But, I mean, I had scored it for Robbie Lawler. And then when you go and you look at, you know, the stats of the fight, and you say, okay, you know, round two, Donald had Cowboy had a nice takedown. When you talk about, you know, significant strikes landed, Cowboy landed 82 significant strikes. Robbie Lawler landed 77 total strikes. Cowboy landed 99. Robbie landed 85. When you're talking about control time, Cowboy Cerrone had the edge there. I had him for a minute 29. So when you look at it and you say Cowboy had more control in the fight as far as control time, he threw more shots at 185 to Robbie's 164. He landed more. He landed at a higher percentage. He landed more significant strikes. He threw more significant strikes. When you look at the actual stats, it still goes back to my card, and I still think that Cowboy Cerrone won that fight. So now, with the fact that, you know, we can't change that, what happens to these guys next? It was an impressive fight, but with everything that's going on, do you give Robbie Lawler a title shot now? Tyron Woodley says no, that he shouldn't deserve a title shot because, you know, he lost the title and you know, a few seconds when he fought him the first time, and then he took over a year off. I don't really knock him for taking that time off. I think that was a super smart decision of his. Number one, no one has taken more serious blows than Robbie Lawler. He has been in so many battles. So with him not being champ, I thought it was a perfect time for him to take the time to heal up properly, especially coming off a huge knockout. I think 6 months to a year is a perfect time for a fighter to take off. So I don't really take that against him. When you look around and you say, okay, so who do you give the next fight against? Now that Tyron is not going to get GSP, I think Robbie Lawler, Tyron Woodley, the rematch too, is the fight that needs to be made. You know, Carlos Condon's gone. I mean, he just fought Wonder Boy twice. You know, he just fought Damian Maya. So the perfect person for him to fight next, or Tyron Woodley to fight next, would be Robbie Lawler. I think that's what's going to happen, in my opinion. Now, and then as far as Cowboy goes, I think he, you know, with two back-to-back losses, I think he's going to have to take a step back. I thought he fought really well, even though I think he won. You know, I think he has to go and kind of rebuild himself like he's done in the past, get back on a winning streak, and then get back in the title picture. But as far as any title claims, I think it's pretty much he's now out of the title picture. But I do think this puts Robbie Lawler right into the thick of things. And it really does set up for a Robbie Lawler Tyron Woodley rematch. As far as I'm concerned, Robbie should have gotten an immediate rematch after the first fight. Flash knockdown, you know, he really never had a chance to really show what he could do against Tyron Woodley, even though I thought Woodley was going to win. But when you have a standing champion who has defended the title as much as Robbie Lawler, I think you have to give him a rematch. So that's my opinion on that one. Now, the last fight of the night that we're going to talk about, actually we'll talk about a couple other fights, but the last fight on the main card, that was an interesting one, and that was Jimmy Manoa versus Volkan Ozdemir. And it's kind of crazy how this fight came about. They didn't trust John Jones, really. And that's how Jimmy Manoa ended up on this card. They just stuck him on this card. They gave him a fight so that if something happened with John Jones, Cormier would have an opponent to fight. And so they gave him Volkan Ozdemir. And I keep not giving Volkan the credit he deserves. And a lot of other people stop giving Volkan the credit he deserves. But every time you turn around, Volkan lays hands on people. And it was no difference here, where you had a situation where he's fighting Jimmy Manoa, and you're talking about 4 minutes four minutes and 20 seconds into the fight, they're in a clinch against the fence, and it didn't even look like he hit him hard, Jimmy Manoa hard, but Manoa went down and did not recover. And Volkan finished him off. And I love the nickname, Time's Running Out, because he has this sneaky power. It doesn't have to be a huge shot. He's just just this guy that's just blessed with a lot of power. And you know, when they had at UFC. UFC had Rumble in, and he had trained with Volkan. And he's just talking about how Volkan's not the fastest guy. He may not be the strongest guy, but he's one of the hardest working guys in mixed martial arts. And I believe him because he keeps winning fights that he should not win. Jimmy Manoa was kind of like the de facto, if Jones can't make it, he's getting a title shot. If, you know, if he wins this, the very next fight, he's getting a title shot. Now, with Volkan knocking out Manoa, Volkan's right in that title picture. You know, when you look at the title situation here, as a matter of fact, when you're starting to talk about Daniel Cormier and what's next for Daniel Cormier, and a lot of people suspect that he will go to the heavyweight division. But if you were looking, if the Brock Lesnar fight with John Jones doesn't happen, I think you have a John Jones Gustafsson fight, and then I think you set up a Volkan Daniel Cormier fight. That's kind of the way I would see the everything kind of breaking down here. But if Cormier goes to heavyweight, then, you know, Volkan will have, you know, he'll have another fight in there. He won't be fighting Rumble, that's for sure. So, but it's going to be interesting. Volkan's actually has staked this claim in that division. A couple other fights that I want to talk about before we wrap things up. Aljamain Sterling had an impressive fight as he won. This was just a fantastic card. You had Lomas versus Knight, with Lomas winning. This card had a little something for everyone. Yeah, there's no way that anyone could be disappointed in this card. The UFC has done a really good job. So this concludes my recap of the UFC 214 card. And on our next episode, we'll be talking about more UFC news and the upcoming events that's coming up this weekend. All right, to all, a good night.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.